I love days like these at the pool, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can sometimes take me out of the moment. I'm ready to make a splash with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi, risankizumab riza. Skyrizi is a prescription-only injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. At 4 months, most people saw 90% clearer skin when measured from head to toe, and many were even 100% plaque-free. People also saw significant improvement in psoriasis symptoms of pain, redness, itching, and burning.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Now there's nothing on my skin, thanks to Skyrizi, and that means everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
This is Danielle Robay from Bookmarked by Reese's Book Club. A new car is kind of like a new book. It takes you places you never thought you could go. What will you drive into the next chapter of your life? It's fun to dream about your next car, but when you're done dreaming, you need to head to Cars.com. Cars.com has the tools and expert advice to help you find your dream car. Their advanced search filters allow you to explore 2 million new and used cars so that you can find the perfect car. Start your search with Cars.com. Where to next?
Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow Legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, But We Didn't Break the Glass.
So tonight's Dead Letter takes us to rural Arkansas in the late 2000s. If you grew up out there, or really anywhere in the rural South, and yes, even us North Carolinians call Arkansas the South, you know the back roads are dotted with these old, very small towns and schoolhouses that closed decades ago. The buildings just sit, doors unlocked, windows going, chalk still on the boards in a few of them, and for a certain kind of teenager, that's a Saturday.
Wait, so y'all don't call it Arkansas?
No, we don't Arkansas. Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm going to say it took me a minute to wrap my head around Arkansas being in the South because it's so far west.
That's right.
But the bottom line is, here's the interesting thing about it. The accents from Arkansas are, in some cases, almost indistinguishable from North Carolina. You will meet somebody and be like, oh my God, are you from Raleigh or whatever? And they're like, no, Arkansas, which is very fascinating to me. That like regionally, there's these pockets of very similar accents between these states.
I love that kind of diaspora anthropology. And you know, it's interesting to me. But wherever you're from, wherever you are, that kind of attraction is irresistible. I guess in legal terms, it's also called an attractive nuisance.
Yes, an abandoned building. Absolutely.
Yeah, or, you know, just like Mel's Hole. Or do you remember the pond from one of those Terry Lovelace stories, you know, where readers had sent in stories and he published 50 of them, I think, in the back of his second book? There's a pond there where I think it's the two girls of the carousel. It may have been that. The UFO carousel.
That's right. It's one of my favorite stories ever.
Right. Actually. So that levee or whatever the water is called an attractive nuisance where people want to go check it out, but it could be dangerous, much like an abandoned building. But here's the thing. There's a whole culture built up around exploring abandoned places and buildings. Urban exploration, or urbex, as it's called now, where you know people are documenting these buildings before they collapse, which I think is a good thing, but it also can be dangerous and illegal if you're trespassing. So be careful.
That's right.
On the safer side of that, It's also called legend tripping. So Jeff Ballinger.
Yes.
Ballinger, I think, also was a guest on Jim Harrell's podcast where he talked all about legend tripping and how to do it safely and legally. And some people call it that. But it's an activity for the adventurous and the curious long before we named our show. So that's not where we got it.
Yes.
But yeah, there's some legends involved with it. And I'll say there's a real line you cross when you stop documenting and start carrying things home.
Yeah.
Right? Or the Brady Bunch artifact they carried home from Hawaii. One of the
yes, tikis. Do not take things from Hawaii.
Or anything from the Bell Witch property, or really any place that has a history or anything natural.
Well, yeah, and there's a reason for that. There's a reason, you know, the park rangers and the wardens and the people in charge of tourism for these spots, they say that for a reason. There's, you know, one of them is like, well, if 1,000 people come and they each one of them takes something, then eventually there's nothing left for everybody else to look at.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's also the idea of the curse. That's something that you might believe. And I'll just say, you know, I took a piece of the Silver Bridge with me back to my office in New York City a long time ago, back in a former career. And things did not go well for me until I got rid of it.
Okay,
so I'm just going to say, a lot of people are going to say, well, that's because you were a crappy editor. And it's like, I don't know. Right. I don't know. I felt weird about it. I felt so weird about it. The office building I worked in when I was editing TV commercials, it was a classic New York like thing down in Soho where we had that shaft in the middle, you know, that's closed in on all four sides with fire escapes and stuff like that. And eventually I moved that piece of the Silver Bridge from my edit bay out back there to the stairwell because I was like, this thing is bringing me bad luck.
That's a major part of tonight's theme, though, that story, in that we talked to a ranger, park ranger at the location of the Bellwitch house. And he said, yeah, you can laugh about it, but a lot of people mail back pebbles they've taken from the site because they attribute it. And it is a bit of that psychological or real world condition stemming from a Latin phrase, post hoc ergo propter hoc, which means because event Y followed event X, event Y must have been caused by event X. So you take a pebble home and then you get fired. And then you wreck your car. And it's like, okay, you know what? There's some coincidence, but as I always say or ask, how much coincidence is too much? Because this tonight's story is that some things happened and then you look for a reason. It's like, could it have been this? And people laugh about that until it happens to you.
And here's the thing about this. Jen, who sent in this dead letter tonight, she didn't know about any of that. She just liked this mirror. So she brought it home. After all, the school didn't need it anymore.
So tonight's dead letter is about what separates a haunted place from a haunted object. A place is something you can move away from. And this object, she kept loading into the moving truck herself. So Scott, sir, it is your turn to read.
In the late 2000s, growing up in rural Arkansas, I oftentimes would find myself exploring abandoned buildings for fun. One such exploration led me to an old abandoned school in the middle of nowhere. In this school, I found a mirror that I thought would be an interesting piece to put in my apartment. I don't condone stealing, but I took it home, spray painted it, and cleaned it up, and didn't think anything of it until a few years later when I moved the mirror with me to Los Angeles. Now, at this time, I lived with my boyfriend, now husband, and he is a very skeptical, non-woo-woo person. We had the mirror hanging in our first apartment together. One evening, I was taking a bath, and out of the corner of my eye, saw the bath towel that was hanging on the back of the door swinging wildly. When I turned my head to see it, it stopped dead, no movement at all. Nervously, I went to the door to see if my boyfriend was trying to get into the bathroom, but he said he was in the living room the whole time. He didn't seem too convinced on what I was telling him, and I was left with this uneasy feeling, but ultimately no explanation. Fast forward to the following year, and the same mirror moved with us to a new apartment. One day, while his parents were visiting us, we went into the bedroom to take an important call we were waiting on, leaving his older parents in the living room down the hall. While my boyfriend and I were talking privately, we heard three clear knocks on the bedroom door. He opened the door, only to find no one there. He and I both looked down the hall and did not see anything. We both clearly heard the knocks, so we went to his parents, who were quietly watching TV down the hall. We asked if they knocked on the bedroom door, and they assured us they hadn't. They're not the pranking type, so we knew they were being truthful.
My boyfriend turned white and suddenly became a lot less skeptical in that moment. A few months later, and once again, we moved apartments and brought the mirror with us. We have a cat who is not very fond of visitors and usually hides when people come over to the apartment. I just walked some friends out of the apartment after their visit. I sat on the bed and heard scratching from the closet door. My cat had seemingly gotten himself stuck inside the closet while company was over. I unceremoniously opened the closet to find nothing. My cat was not there, but I definitely heard distinct scratches from the door. Right at that moment, my cat came out from under the bed. He was not near the closet at all. Shamefully, I must admit that it didn't immediately occur to my boyfriend and I that perhaps the mirror was the catalyst to everything that had been happening. That evening, after sharing my story with him, we made the decision to discard the mirror. We threw it in the dumpster, but made sure not to break the glass. Since then, we've had no odd occurrences. This was 10 years ago, and it still brings chills to me when I think about everything. I still wonder to this day if the mirror found a new owner. I hope not.
The paranormal surrounds us, and we'll dive back in shortly.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's, mm-hmm. but the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the strawberry watermelon refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer. We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're gonna need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Let's get back to unraveling this dead letter.
I love that story for several reasons because, like a lot of these stories, there are several levels to this, even though it seemed like, oh, a couple things happened, not a big deal. I'll bet if I was there, I wouldn't have balked, but you weren't there. And this is what I love about people when they say they don't believe in any of this stuff at all, but you'll see them doing little superstitious things. And we're talking about superstition here. Exactly, especially with, like, you know, the 7 years of bad luck with the mirrors and this and that and what to do and what not to do and to protect yourself. And they'll do it anyway. Right. And I've asked this. It's like, well, if you don't believe in that, then why do you do, you know, the pinch of salt over the shoulder or these little things? Well, just in case. Yeah, I don't really believe in that stuff, but it's fun to do. It's like, you know, I think there's a little more to that because some things you do seem like a hassle. But getting into this, I have some thoughts and we're going to integrate my ideas that spun off from the story. But I want you to tell us a little bit about a more famous haunted mirror that I've actually seen myself.
Yeah, this is, and by the way, I'm so envious of you that you've
well, we'll
this,
go one day.
There is a parlor mirror at the Myrtles Plantation, which for some reason the Myrtles keeps coming up. And I used to say that a certain house that shall remain nameless, take a shot, seemed to like publicity. It's like it knew how podcasts work and it wanted things to get out about it. So here we are. We're really pushing the Myrtles Plantation, which I have absolutely no stake in and neither do you. But there's a mirror there that supposedly holds the trapped souls of Sarah Woodruff and two of her children. And the detail that makes people lose sleep about this are these handprints on it. There's small little handprints in that surface in the glass. And supposedly, they've swapped the actual mirror out a few times, and the handprints just keep coming back.
Okay, well, I can tell you, it's a lovely sight to see and has a lot of lore that you can feel. It's not creepy, but there's tons of ghost stories there. So there's a house part, then there's kind of a gift shop, which was like, I think, part of, you know, where the staff cooked meals and such, and there's a lot of stories you hear about it. But the mirror is pretty big. And it has that thing where, you know, the backing on it, I think in the old days, it would have been mercury lined or something to give the reflective surface behind the glass. And over time, as everyone knows, with really old mirrors, that starts to fade and discolor. And so what the guide said is like, yeah, people see stuff in there, but it might be just the discoloration of the backing.
Right.
But the other part, aside from the children's hands, which I did not see, is that some folks claim to see the outline of a woman in there. And it may be the woman we're going to talk about. And so I took a bunch of photos standing in front of it by myself with other folks in it. Didn't really see anything. Even my strong sense of pareidolia didn't kick in. But you can, I can see where people say you can kind of see an outline of a woman. But it's not like in your face, kind of an undeniable image.
Right.
But like, well, that's fun. But you do give it some respect. I certainly didn't want to crack it. But anyway, that's part of the story, is that that's the other thing, is that you could see the image or faint image of the woman in question tied to the Myrtle story.
This goes back to your old mantra, respect the things that don't care if you believe they exist.
And that's the thing. So, I mean, there's other parts of it. Like, I show respect because it's not just the spirit or spirit that you are contending with. It's also people's customs and beliefs and their mores and what they value and think are sacred. And so, like, for instance, you know, as we said in the beginning, there's an old mourning custom where you cover every mirror in the house right after someone dies. And the belief was that, yeah, perhaps their soul will get trapped in the glass or confuse it. That's the other thing I noticed, especially with Asian cultures, is that there's a confusion of the spirits. You're trying to confuse them, substituting things. And you say, being sophisticated, it's like, well, come on, you know, demons and bad spirits, they know everything about you. Well, from what you may learn if you dive into it, is that there are different levels that we also talked about of spirit world, and some may have the intelligence of a smart dog or insects or just animals and not much self-awareness in a weird way. So there's different levels of beings. They're not all omniscient and omnipotent. And so you might be able to confuse one, much as you can confuse a chicken or a dog. Yeah. Do the blanket trick with your dog. See whether my master disappeared. And it's like, the blanket dropped and they're gone. How does that work?
I've yet to own a smart dog, but you know, I've never had a border collie. I've heard they have a vocabulary of like 70 words or something. And I've seen it on the Letterman show from 1,000 years ago. But here's the thing about the Myrtles. There's a problem though. There's a historian who actually dug into that property. He's a good friend of ours, former guest on our show, and the guy who's always researched and written a book about everything we cover before we even know it existed, Troy Taylor. And he took the whole Myrtle's backstory apart. This guy works exactly how we do. It's one of the reasons that we're so fond of him. He's very good at digging into the dirt and figuring out what's real and what's not. The famous version, the enslaved woman, Chloe, poisoning a birthday cake, 10 murders in the house, almost none of it holds up, according to Troy. There's one verified murder at the Myrtles, and the rest is marketing. It's been repeated so long, it's starting to become history. And with AI and AI research, which a lot of people are doing these days, these are the kinds of stories that are going to start to get ensconced with, you know, being into reality. But you need somebody like Troy to come in there and say, hey, you know what? None of these people actually existed. Here's the one thing that might have happened that was the seed for this. And by the way, all due respect to folklore, folklore is awesome and oral history is awesome. But one of the things we like to do is like, what's at the root of this? Because we believe that the paranormal can coexist with folklore that isn't necessarily provable. We think the paranormal can still be there in the same lane with it.
Yeah, exactly. I always say that. It's not mutually exclusive. You say, well, that person didn't haunt this place, and so, or they didn't exist, or they were a mile away. And you say, well, then that all of this must be false. It's like, well, that is possibly true, but it doesn't mean there is an activity of a paranormal nature going on in that spot. We just don't know what that is. And then people say like, well, you can, nowadays the popular metaphysical concept of manifesting your own reality. And as we know, even with DMT experiences, that, you know, our reality and what we see is just a filter, a veil, a lens, a shade of something that aids us in our daily life, but isn't exactly the real real. And so it's just a version of that. So, okay, does it have to be one-to-one that, and this is the part I love about Troy's books. It's, I want to know everything. I want to know what the real history is. I want to know the real people, what really happened and what really didn't. And I also want to know what people are reporting. Because again, it's not mutually exclusive. It's like, well, if that's not real, then none of this is real. And I can see how some people might take that as a shortcut to say, well, this is all baloney, that none of these stories, because the facts aren't right, that nothing's really happening. Well, as we just heard, is that you may not believe this, but something happened and now it shook you.
Yeah, and just quickly, folks, if you haven't heard us talk about Troy Taylor on Astonishing Legends or in the past, we did want to point you to his website. It's American Hauntings, Inc., I-N-K, like ink that you have in a pen, AmericanHauntingsInc.com. He's got a podcast network there. He's got books. He's truly amazing. His research is next level. Anything he's talking about is amazing. Go check him out right away if you like our show.
Yeah, he has a ton of live events too, which sound like a lot of fun. I wish I lived closer. I would attend every one of them. But in the case of the Myrtles Plantation, and as it applies to haunted objects and the real story, that's kind of what I'm getting at. You know, when you're talking about the enslaved woman, Chloe, I mentioned that on that previous episode, as far as being the legend that is told at the place by the tour guides. Our tour guide was very good in telling the legend and then saying, like, well, this part probably didn't happen or we have no proof of that, but we have this. It's like, I think the legend goes that the horrible, awful, evil woman who was one of the owners or married to the owner controlled the staff and ruled with an iron fist and all sorts of things to punish people with, and chained up this enslaved woman at the stove in the kitchen so she could keep cooking. And I believe there is a, near the stove, like there's a metal ring or outlet or something that people will point to and say, that's where she was chained up. But there's no proof of that. There's something like that. I may totally be misremembering it. I apologize. But we did hear that story. And there were variations of that, though, where you say, well, there's no proof of children being murdered or the poisoned birthday cake. They mentioned, the tour guide mentions that as well. But there may be a case of children or people accidentally eating white oleander, which we know is poisonous.
Oh, okay.
Or that being used in the cakes. It's just a mishmash. You know what I'm saying? Like that may have been put in the cake.
Right.
Or that's the poison she used, or it was accidentally ingested by some children or adults. Who knows unless you were there. And the 10 murders. But again, that turns into a better story to retell others. And that is, aside from marketing, because these things happen even if no one's getting paid. That's kind of my point, is that people love to hear good ghost stories. And so it doesn't matter. It just kind of gets melded and amalgamated into its own thing over the years. So that's what we're talking about here. And in regards to that story, now, there's a couple of things I'll mention about haunted mirrors. So that one, when we were all there as a group, that's the one where I took pictures in the dining room. I showed a selection of pictures to two.
This is at the Myrtles.
Yeah, still, I believe so. But we went in that trip, we went to a few other places. But I believe it was those photos I sent to two separate psychic mediums. And I just said, what do you see? Trying not to front load anything, not even mentioning the name. And they didn't. But they independently both said the same things. It's like, I don't know where that staircase is, but I see someone in a military uniform standing on the stairs. Now, the weird thing is the other psychic medium had no connection to the other one, said the same thing. There's somebody in a uniform, an older gentleman, and he's standing on the stairs. But yeah, I didn't sense, but I'm not that sensitive, I guess. But took a bunch of pictures, didn't see anything, but they did independently, which was weird. And also had a comment with one of our travel mates saying the exact same thing, that they saw a black cloud or mist up near them in the same dining room. So that was weird.
Okay.
And part of our story too, when things are confirmed by two people or more, somehow that makes it more believable. In regards to Jen's partner here, it reminds me of the old German saying, I'm trying to work into the show at some point, die Ohren glauben anderen. And I mangled my German. It basically translates to the eyes believe themselves, the ears believe other people.
Oh.
Which means if you hear something and you trust them, it's like you might believe them because it's somebody you know and you trust and you'll believe that. But really, you're not going to fully believe until you see it for yourself.
Right.
The eyes believe themselves. Right. So that is, like I said, it's your wife, your husband, girlfriend, boyfriend, just a good, trusted, longtime friend. And it's like, well, that old saying, I believe that you believe something. I believe that you think you saw something, which is a respectful way of saying, like, I don't really know. Like, I wasn't there, but
respectful and condescending.
Yeah. I believe that you saw it. It's like, okay, so you're saying I'm a dummy. You know, what are you saying here? But again, you can't expect people also to just fully believe something that they have not witnessed themselves. they're just not going to get it, because in defense of this, there's also a feeling that goes with it that's indescribable, ineffable. So you have to experience it, and that's what happens here. And so when you're talking about the actions that come with this and then a reason for that when nothing was happening previously, that's logical. It's like, we got to find out what's causing this, because it's that black widow in the upper corner of your bedroom making a nest. It's like, I'll get that tomorrow. Like, you might want to take care of that tonight. Whatever it is, you don't leave that to chance. And like, oh, I'm sure it's fine. So in regards to the Myrtle story and haunted mirrors, the most famous haunted mirror in America is also anchored to a tragedy that mostly didn't happen here. You know, we're talking about the Myrtles, and that it doesn't really matter, I think, what the real story of who actually lived there and this and that and what people see. If you see something in there, then there's something in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, well, I'm seeing something moving around that's not actually in the room, or something weird's happening, but the origin story is not correct. So it can't be. Yeah. Well, that's an easy out. Yeah. But in Jen's case, she had no backstory at all. There's nothing leading up to where, like, we did a bunch of stuff, and then we thought it was haunted. I bought it from this haunted house, and it's the classic trope of you go into the old curio shop and you pay the guy for some object. Very Twilight Zone. In fact, at least a couple Twilight Zones had that premise. And then you go back to the shop the next day to get rid of it, and the guy's not there. Shop never existed.
Yeah.
That's the theatrical sense of that. But she had none of that. She didn't know the story that, you know, that mirror when it was hanging back at the school. And also, it's a school. Like, it's got a bunch of kids staring into it, going there.
Right.
Flattening down their cowlicks or whatever. There shouldn't be any kind of weirdness to it, right? So it's a very innocuous, innocent backstory, if there is one. So she has this object, which she doesn't really know the full provenance of, but from as much as she knows, it's kind of cool. But everything that happens after that, the minor incidents, are caused by something she thinks and feels. Something is happening here. This is a textbook version of this activity that travels with the mirror. So yeah, one apartment, the towel on the back of the bathroom door flaps. And I love also that it flaps violently, not just a little bit of movement.
That's scary. Fabric that's violently moving is super frightening to me for some reason. I don't know why.
Of course, anything violently flapping.
Unless it's a sail, on a boat.
Right.
Like, I'm okay with
it's
that.
It's the blow up guy in the car lot.
No.
Yeah. That's kind of humorous and maybe kitschy, but you know, it's kind of fun. My point is that there's two levels of it in the way you react to it. It's like with me, what would have happened is that there would be a tiny bit of movement with the towel and I caught out of the corner of my eye. And then the other flavor of that is that you doubt yourself. That's my story. Like, did that really happen?
Did that happen?
I'm pretty sure I thought I saw that. Like, it was out of the corner of my eye, and that didn't, it wasn't a mistake. There's no breeze here. There's no fan, but I'm pretty sure I saw that. Then you get to the part where it's flapping and it's undeniable. That thing's flapping for no reason.
Right.
Something is happening. Then the next apartment and the three knocks. At the third place, there's a scratching at the closet.
Right.
Again, very classic stuff. But one constant thing between all the addresses is that mirror she keeps hanging on the wall at the next place.
Right.
Now, also on that trip, one of our friends, and I won't mention names here, but it's somebody we've mentioned before, is a veteran, seasoned ghost hunter, loves to go to haunted locations and just kind of do a little bit of legend tripping and ghost hunting and takes some objects. But one time, and I think it was an abandoned medical facility, like a hospital, took her son. Now, this is what I love also about this, that you have somebody who's really into this, and then you have this person's son. He's into it, but not as much as the parent, right? Like, there's, oh, this would be kind of fun. I like, you know, same attraction. It's like, well, that'll be cool. We'll be poking around a supposedly haunted old hospital setting. And they found a gurney wheel that was just kind of lying on a pile of rubble. And this person, I've met them too, a really cool kid, but they love to collect old curio kind of things, took that home, I think maybe with the permission of my friend. And then things started happening. And then our friend was like, okay, that's enough. We're going to take that thing. And I can't remember exactly what they did with it, but they took it back, I believe, to the hospital setting, or did some kind of, there's also ceremonies you can do. And yeah. It stopped after that. But it's like, okay, that might have been all but a coincidence. But you look for the nearest thing. It's like, okay, what's changed? Well, my son did bring that thing back. And it's sitting in his rust item collection or whatever, but we got rid of it. Another good friend of ours through the show had a story. They had a family history of things happening, but in her apartment with her boyfriend, who at the time didn't believe any of this kind of stuff. So she was asking us, like, well, what do you think this is? Like, we got all your weird stuff happening. And one thing that she said is that, again, he respected his girlfriend at the time, you know, loved her, of course, didn't buy this. It's like, this is a coincidence of just, you know, things you think might be happening that you're kind of imagining. And then I think what happened is that they had a laundry tub that had, that was heavy, had some clothes in it or something, blankets, whatnot, that was on a shelf in the laundry room. And while he was in there, that thing slid,
like a laundry basket.
It slid off the top shelf and landed with a loud thud in front of him. And then it's like, okay, that you can't deny. As we always say, because he was such a skeptic and denier, debunker type, that freaked him out even more because that's impossible, and yet he just witnessed it.
So here's the thing about that case. You look at her boyfriend being a skeptic. Jen is not necessarily a skeptic here, but she also went into this not knowing about that lore associated with mirrors. So she didn't come out of there thinking about that set of boundaries and rules about mirrors. She was just like, oh, here's this cool thing. I'm going to take it home. I'm going to put it in my house. It looks neat. Nobody wants it anymore. And then all of this stuff started happening. So in a lot of these stories, and this is what makes this a very interesting dead letter, because you can say, oh, well, I knew I wasn't supposed to take that rock from the haunted mine where three people disappeared, but I'm going to take the rock home. That's not what's happening here. She's doing urban exploration. She's just like, oh, look at this. Here's the thing that nobody wants. It's probably going to get vandalized anyway. It would look great in my house. So she brings it home.
You go in not knowing anything, but like we say, does that matter if you know or not? Does the spirit care? But you can't say the mirror did it at that time because it wasn't a suspect yet, where you're not preloading or front-loading yourself with a bunch of spooky info. It's like, well, the old shopkeeper did say it was haunted and I could make three wishes, but it's probably not the mirror, or maybe it is.
Right.
So there's all that. And that is a real psychological aspect to it, is that there may be nothing to it, that you're just imagining this. But when you don't know, that's kind of my point. And so, but the young woman we were talking to about her apartment predicament, we were trying to run over things same way. It's like, okay, what could it possibly be in the apartment that's causing that? And you were asking her, like, do you have any old items that you got handed down through the family? You know, was there anything that jumps out at you as being a possible object that you brought into that space that followed you and was causing problems at the other previous space?
Right.
Well, not really. I can think of anything. Well, you know what? There is one piece of furniture that was a family hand-me-down. And I think the story goes, it was an aunt or great aunt that the family believes was dabbling in the dark arts and had this old phonograph or something, this small piece of furniture. And that got eventually down to this person donated. She goes, that's the only thing in the apartment. It's like, oh, well, dark arts, family heirloom passed down. Maybe that's it. Maybe you want to give that to another family member. And we never really found out if that alleviated it. But look, again, the real part of it is that something's happening. And if you do something to try and correct that, then you might get some relief, which is what you're wanting, because you don't want to be waking up with really spooky, weird stuff that keeps you up at night. So, you know, same thing with the state of Hawaii, getting complaints of night marchers arriving in the back seats of cars of tourists and them complaining. And finally, the state saying, okay, fine. They plant a bunch of tea plants, T-I plants, and then it appeared to stop. So you have a real problem. People are really seeing and complaining about this. So you do something and it seemed to work. Well, is it all true? I don't know, but it's hard to argue with success, as I say. But here in this case, you know, the reason that this mirror is carrying a lot of this, maybe more so than other haunted type objects, is that a mirror is kind of like magic. Imagine if you were a primitive society and the only way to look at it yourself was looking at a still pool of water even if it's pre-metal smelting ages, the Bronze Age, the this and that, where you could get polished metals shining enough to see reflection or able to make glass, all you had was like maybe a reflective pool to look into to see yourself. And other than that, you didn't really see yourself much.
Exactly.
Imagine all the bits of food in your caveman beard that people weren't pointing out. But that's my point, is that there's something with seeing your own image that is, especially so clearly in a mirror that is more of a modern fabrication, that's so accurate, that is, it's magical in a way, and where you would be without it. But when you look at yourself, it's also reversed. The mirror is a whole world unto itself and what's beyond that. And when you stand between two mirrors and it feels like you're infinity, it's a piece of witchcraft in itself or just magic. So scrying, as we had talked about in a previous episode, the mirror figures prominently and is also known, as far as scrying with a mirror, known as catoptromancy. So catoptromancy is reading the future in a mirror or some kind of dark surface, but you can gaze into the mirror and it's a whole other world. It's a mirror world, the upside down, Alice in Wonderland's world of like things being topsy-turvy somewhere else. And think about the Bloody Mary game kids play, kind of a watered down summoning ritual, or Candyman. You stare into the mirror with a candle in the darkened bathroom and you say the name three times and they should appear behind you. Even creepier was that they would be in the mirror facing you, I think. I don't know what's creepier, something behind you that you can't see with your straight-on eyes, or something in the reflection. But it gets treated as a thin place of the veil across all kinds of cultures because it's a boundary. It's a border between what's real and what you see and a reflected or reversed world of that. And it yeah. also is the idea of the psychomantium, which I think Greg and Dana Newkirk, this is a couple of years ago, they built one and I forgot to see what the results were, but I wanted to build one myself. But that is an old device used in parapsychology, spiritualism. And essentially what it is, it's a small enclosed little area or booth you build with you need a chair, you want dim lighting, and then you have a mirror angled so that it doesn't reflect anything but the darkness around you. And you kind of scry into that.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. To quote a friend of mine.
Well, we'll have a few drinks yes. when I come to visit
my friend
you next,
Joe,
we'll
who owns he's a co-owner at least of the Detroit Record Club. One of my favorite expressions of his was, "Yeah, I'm not doing that."
Well, it's compared to the Greek necromantion, I think. But it's the same thing for scrying. So ancient Greece and Rome. In the Greek version, it was a temple devoted to necromancy, devoted to Hades and Persephone.
Okay.
In the more modern tradition, in 1933, Raymond Moody, remember him? He was the originator of the term, the near-death experience. In that book, Reunions, Visionary Encounters with Departed Loved Ones, he talks about the psychomantium and believing it was a good tool to resolve grief, to be able to talk to loved ones you may have some unresolved issues with.
I mean, sitting in a dark room with a mirror in the dark, it sounds a lot like meditation.
Well, it can be. That's part of the gateway, is that you clear your mind, attain
some
peace.
Right, so like if you go in there and you do all that, and then like you're like, oh, I feel better. It's like, is it because you were meditating or is it because you were in a dark room with a mirror?
Well, that's, I mean, you're basically getting rid of all the noise around you of daily life and just concentrating and being relaxed. Yeah. And it is a form of meditation. And also the same thing is that you keep it dark and maybe you just have one candle or a very dim light bulb and then you gaze into the reflected darkness and maybe you'll see something. Some people don't want to see anything, and I understand that as well. But again, my point is the mirror itself, already without any of this, is a magical, mystical piece of furniture.
Well, the interesting thing about the mirrors breaking and the 7 years of bad luck and all that, in Renaissance Venice, the silver-backed Murano mirrors were expensive.
Yeah.
So the reading that a lot of folklorists like is that wealthy households would lean on this curse. Well, if you break it, you know, it's a curse and everything. You're going to dress this accident up as cosmically dangerous to keep people from making mistakes with mirrors because it costs you a lot of money to replace them. But you'll also hear that the 7 years was really 7 years of a servant's wages to work off the loss, which is repeated all over the place. But it's hard to find that, nail it down to a real source. It's possible to believe that these things develop simultaneously, parallel or together. But the reality is that the number seven predates Venice by 1,000 years. That part of this whole thing is Roman.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of philosophy wrapped up in all this, and the reflection and the light. And what's interesting to me, Forrest, too, is over the years and the, you know, the almost a dozen years that we've been doing this show and this idea and the gut pee, as we used to say, the grand unified theory of the paranormal, which we're working on, and also your rules, which we haven't talked about in a while. But in the grand unified theory of the paranormal, there's this idea of the light. The light is a source and the darkness is not a source. And so this whole understanding that the things that want to get you are attracted to the light and they're repelled by the darkness. So then there's this concept of the mirror, which gathers light and reflects it back at you. And it's interesting to me, I think, in the same way that people are drawn to the ocean.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, well, this is, it's amazing. And it draws you on a spiritual level. And it's like, well, did we all start out in the ocean? Perhaps we did. Did we all start out as light? Why are mirrors so fascinating to us? What is this experience?
I like the light idea.
Yeah. So it's like, I just, man, I'm just getting really groovy deep
well,
here. All right, all right, all right.
Yeah, but you ain't, you're not
the light.
You're not going to play around with it is what I'm gathering. Yeah.
So anyway, that's, I think it's an interesting idea. And I think it's interesting that Jen latched on to the concept that something was going on with this, and whether or not, I also think there's value in like whether or not this was the source of problems. If you decide that it is and then you address it, that's a solution in itself. And maybe that solution is a manifestation of you solving a problem, regardless of whether or not it's connected to the source of the problem.
Yeah, there's an element which, if you don't believe in any of this at all, is that you are faced with something that upsets you, that is disconcerting on the very lowest level. And at the highest level is that there's something in your house that is not good and you should do something about it. But what you are doing, and I'm not sure how I feel about this term, but taking agency, having some agency, which is if you really want to do something about this and remediate it, then it is best practice to start with a feeling, a stance, and most importantly, a belief that you do have some say in this, you have power, you have that quote unquote agency, and you are strong and you are brave and you have enough courage to stand up to this thing. And it is one of those classic narrative scenarios where it's like something presses you and it seems nefarious or even violent or just negative, maybe even evil. But they want you to stand up and do something about it, and that's the lesson. And once you stand up for yourself, it's like, okay, there we go. That's the response, not so much that we needed, it's the response that you needed. Because life is scary, and it's full of troubles. And you have to stand up for yourself. Now, that's apart from doing something foolish, like I'm going to go to this haunted place because I don't believe any of this, and I'm going to do something that's a desecration. And then it's like, okay, that's poking the bear too hard. And that's the thing. You don't, as I always say, you don't have to, you don't need to poke the bear. You don't need to be afraid of the bear, but you must respect the bear's power in that it can do harm. And if you follow all the rules, especially with wildlife, and respect wildlife. Don't be those goofy tourists who are trying to take a picture next to a buffalo or a bear or a moose, anything really, folks. Just don't touch it. Don't touch it. There's a reason for that. Don't take anything home. Don't touch anything. Take only pictures. Leave only smiles, whatever they say. Then you'll probably be okay. And if something happens that is testing you in a way, then find that courage within yourself and you'll have more power than you believe. But in another aspect, I'm very curious about how this works. What are the mechanics of this? And so when we were reading the story, you were reading the story, I wondered, because you now have this classic scenario, okay, right? You've got the three knocks, the three representing a mockery or a jab
of the Trinity,
of the Holy Trinity.
If you're a Christian,
it doesn't. Well, that's the point. I don't think I don't know what their religious background is, but it happens whether you believe in it or not. That's another point we always make. It doesn't seem to matter what your religious belief is, or and maybe it's more of a joke, a trickster thing. If you don't believe in anything, and I think, and perhaps this is there are some studies about this, but do culturally or religiously specific things happen as far as actions to people who believe in that? Like if you were Hindi or some other religion, when things happen that are more up your alley, let's say, or in your wheelhouse of belief, do those things tend to happen more because the action itself is meant to get your attention? Like if you heard three knocks, it's like, well, you know, I'm from this culture and that means good luck. It's like, oh, that's right. Not what I was going after as a spirit. No, I wanted to scare you. Sorry. Or something else where it's not specifically too meaningful to your culture, does that happen? But we also have scratching. It's all Bell Witch House stuff, okay? The knocking, the scratching, the rapping, all the same things. But I wonder, how does the mirror part work? If a mirror is that kind of a magical window into another world, or just your own face or putting on clothes, how is that happening where the spirit is trapped or is a open door to another world? Is it in the glass? Is it in the backing? Mercury, right. if it's really an old mirror, I believe there is a process to have a mercury backing on those. Mercury is an important element in alchemy and other, in spiritual and metaphysical and scientific processes, often found in religious sites, just occurring naturally. So is that part of it? Does it have to be in the glass? If you break the mirror, like I said, so she takes it to the dump or whatever and hopes it doesn't break, because that's, again, it's sounding like if it's something trapped in the physical aspect of the mirror itself, does that then release into the world? Are you breaking the bonds like Superman? Was it?
Oh, yes. Terrence I'm glad Stamp? You brought that up. You saved me from having to look it up. Terrence Stamp. Yes.
Yeah, Superman 2, one of the cases.
The Forbidden Zone.
Yeah, where the cases where the sequel's as good at or better than the original film. They're trapped in the Forbidden Zone.
The Forbidden Zone.
And once that breaks with the nuclear blast in space, they're released. Is it something like that? Or is the mirror really just somehow a better door or window, piece of glass, into this other realm?
I want to back up a little bit. They aren't just released. They awkwardly fly off in three very poorly coordinated special effects
yeah, but
directions.
But it's...
I still loved it.
You
it's left
it,
an impression
it was
on an
cool,
entire generation.
Right? Okay,
yes, yeah,
that's kind of my point. Well, there's a lot of this kind of lore and how that works. Even in more popular recent culture, there's a 2013 film called Oculus, which is actually pretty good. It's with Mike Flanagan, who I really like. It stars Karen Gillan, the Scottish actress from Inverness. She's terrific, but she's kind of the lead, but also Brenton Thwaites and Katie Sackhoff. But anyway, I really like Mike Flanagan's stuff. And the idea here, just as the one-sentence synopsis from IMDb, a recently released inmate from a mental asylum learns from his sister that the murder he was convicted of committing were actually orchestrated by a supernatural entity, the Lasser Glass Mirror. So there's something within that mirror and breaking the mirror, but they want to study it, as far as I can remember, what's really happening with that. And the concept I love about the mirror, I'm not going to spoil it, don't worry, is that they have video cameras trained on the mirror, and sometimes it's covered, but the failsafe is that if something bad happens, they can release this lever and it'll smash the mirror. So that's okay, if something goes sideways, we can pull this lever and that'll happen. And that's the failsafe. But a concept I loved about it is that whatever power this was in the mirror was altering what they thought was reality. So you see that is at Room 1408, I think, another terrific film I love, is that somehow these things have the power to manipulate what you think is real. And then when that happens, all bets are off. So are you really, whatever is happening in the mirror, is that causing the scratching noises, the knocking? How does that work mechanically, logistically, physically? When talking about the idea of a box or some object containing spirits in it, there's the idea of the Dybbuk box. Of course, a lot of people know about that. And the guy online who is claiming to buy them from mysterious sources and opening them and all kinds of crap would happen to him. Well, if you want to see a fun thing about the actual spirit, not the box, but the concept as it happens in Jewish folklore, the Coen Brothers movie, A Serious Man, which I often mention for a couple of reasons, is pretty good. But the whole first scene is about an older guy, an actual person that the husband brings home to their modest house because he's it's cold outside. It's snowing, I think, and it's like to warm him up. But the wife believes that that old guy died at least 3 days before.
Right.
And so that's the idea that the Dybbuk is that it's pretending to be somebody or is a spirit that should not be allowed in the house. So for farootmagazine.co.uk, starts off with an explainer. The Coen Brothers 2009 pseudo-biblical black comedy, A Serious Man, begins with a quote from the medieval French rabbi Rashi, which was his nickname. And I say this a lot because I love this line. I always remember it. Receive with simplicity everything that happens to you. And that's the point of the film. It's like, it's just going to happen. Don't get freaked out over it. Just, it's just something that happens and just deal with it. And that'll get you through a lot of life's ups and downs. But as far as the spirit or whatever that is, I do wonder about that. If, again, is it just the window to this other world or powers or beings? Whereas if, say, you look out the window and there's good and bad people walking around out there, they're not in the glass. You are seeing them from your perspective, but they're actually just outside as you are in another world inside. And they're not trapped in the actual silica of the glass or whatever. You're just seeing something. But of course, they can affect you. If you're staring out the window, somebody shines a very bright light in your eyes, that will annoy you. They can't affect you from the other side, even though they won't penetrate the glass. If they're trapped in the glass or in the mirror itself, and that gets broken up in a recycling pile, that glass gets melted down, is it then like haunted spolia? Whereas whatever glass that is, or the oven from Flight
3. It's like the T-1000.
Yeah, Flight 401. Remember the oven? They used that in another plane. And then that was that plane was haunted. Is it like that?
Who wants a microwave with a head in it?
Well, I would, but I wouldn't cook in it. Or maybe I would just make that person's favorite. He likes Totino's pizza rolls. Well, I'll make him some. I'll have some too. Everybody wins. The idea, though, is that transferable? Does that get spread out? Are they still trapped in the glass? I have a lot of questions, but and I don't think they'll even be answered upon my own demise. But anyway, just stuff I worried about is that is to do something about it if it's bothering you. And the only aspect that kind of irks me, I guess, is that when people ask us for help, it's like, well, there's things you can do. It's like, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm like, okay, you don't have to. It's not in my house.
By the way, to be clear, Jen did not ask us
for help.
Forrest is just generally saying this, yes. Jen, we told you not to bring mirrors home from abandoned schools.
No, really.
But you did it anyway, didn't you?
In a larger perspective, it's more about just a very small pet peeve. But when people complain to me about stuff that's happening, it's like, okay, well, what did you do to fix that? Are you changing your behavior? Like, nah.
Well, folks, when you read the folklorist, there's no real evidence that breaking a mirror brings you any misfortune at all. The thing that is documented is the anxiety afterward. People feel real dread, even in the cases where nothing bad follows. Jen felt that dread strongly enough that she felt compelled to carry this mirror down to a dumpster, even though she theoretically didn't know about the history associated with these mirrors. And she set it down whole on purpose, maybe because some part of her landed on what the Romans said thousands of years ago. The night came when she decided that thing had to go, and it went down to the dumpster very carefully. Thank you, Jen, for trusting your story to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Forrest Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Carissia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bolton. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of this show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer.
We're talking about a total game changer. It's made with Red Bull. It's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're gonna need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.